I'd like to talk about fruit of the Dharma. And first of all, just to get a feeling of what Dharma is to feel that connection between the tree and its fruit. It's a kind of not two, not one relationship. And we often talk about having a fruitful life or a fruitful practice, bringing our spiritual life to flower and to fruit. And it feels really appropriate. But I also love to remember what fruit is for the tree, for that one tree itself. We think of that tree, wow, it's come to fruition. It's come to fruit, it's bearing fruit. But what that means is it's got something that's to pass on. It's got a juicy way of passing some kind of essence on. It's not like food for the tree itself, except for the part that just falls down, but doesn't hit the mark. So, I actually want to talk about revolution again, and actually talk about four stages of revolution again, but I'm not going to tie it with that, the lingo from last time from Tibetan Buddhism, but it's actually related, completely related. And I would really again like to open the floor to you all for questions and fruit of your own that's not for you but for us. Some people here may have learned in transpersonal psychology about four stages of what I'm calling revolution, transformation, or just life, aliveness. Four faces of aliveness. And for me, the more powerful way of feeling into each stage is the way that we could see the stages of revolution and the birth of a child. And so the first stage is when the child is floating in the womb. And there's an experience of non-separation. So we might be imagining what the fetus, the literal fetus, is feeling, but it's an image for us that we could get inside of. And especially when we've come to the places in us that have experienced shock and are still in shock. Even if it seems like we shouldn't be in shock because we lost something, because we know that we lose things in this life. But there is a place that got kind of paralyzed with shock. So if we could cut away the judgment of why, like, do we deserve to be in shock just because someone insulted us, or just because when we were a child we lost our lunchbox or something that seems silly. But we could actually come alive to feel where the paralysis is. And actually cultivate that feeling of the child in the womb floating, or the idealization of what a child in a womb floating could be. Even if my own experience, your own experience, that actual experience of being in the womb wasn't that. We could imagine that feeling and bring that feeling of protection without knowing one needed protection to the places in us that experience shock and are still reacting to that shock even when it's not happening. So our job for parenting ourselves is to see what parts got frozen. And again, it's not as important why, because we'll be likely to laugh at why, we'll be likely to judge why, or to make too much of it, say, that was so terrible, I should be, I just should just stay in shock. just to locate, and possibly physically is a good way, so that we don't get trapped in the story, where shock is and what, how, when that gets triggered, what is triggered, what's the shape. And then trying to bring the womb to that place so that it can grow up from there. Sometimes when we come to a retreat where we're in silence and we're allowed to move slowly, and even if we're not talking a lot about heavy duty watching of ourselves, we easily start to do a heavy duty watching of ourselves. And there's a woman whose work I love, and I'm going to meet her this weekend for the first time, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, in case any of you know her. And she brings this out really clearly, the difference between when we're working from our nervous system, trying to move slowly and feel what's happening and what we're doing, trying to watch, and when we go into just feeling and action, when we can actually have a freedom of action that is trustworthy. And she gives a lovely example of the contrast. She says, if we would be in this room trying to move slowly among us, trying to be careful, trying to feel each step, we would be more likely to sort of bump into each other and have accidents and more reasons to be in shock than if we would have to move quickly in a crowded room together. We would kind of allow the animal body to have its intelligence. We would, she says, in her experience, we'd be less likely to have accidents if we have seemingly more chance to have accidents. And so if we can be caring about carefulness, when we're trying to carefully watch what's happening, we're trying to learn to have a new perspective and to sustain that new perspective. Sometimes we could just be careful and we could know, I'm in my nervous system, I'm watching. And I haven't integrated this new perspective. So I really need to be careful because I'm being careful, if that makes sense. And we could know that's not, the idea is not to stay that careful. The idea is for the carefulness to help us open up the natural capacity to move in that new way from that new perspective. It's just, we practice that technique so that it reminds us of the natural capacity. So we practice loving kindness to me and to you and to everything, so that we could come out of our habitual perspective of separation and enmity, but not only just to install a new operating system, the way I was taught, or a new software on top of our operating system, but to actually open up something below all of that that naturally does love, that is in us, that knows how to do that. So it's, the technique is just enough to open out that potential. And so when we know we do need to watch carefully because we know we're being misguided by our perspective, we're not seeing, that womb-like quality can really help, that it doesn't become too careful, so careful that we're a danger to ourselves and others. And it seems to me that in some cultures that we might be losing that human heritage of some cultures that have more integrated in the culture that wide open protection that doesn't even know about the word protection. It's so protected, the subject of protection doesn't come up. So that there can be that really dropping into relaxation. And so that on my birthday this year, an old friend gave me a wonderful present of two words. because she says, I know that you like playing with words. And she has a friend who's living in Greenland just now with some Inuit people. And she said, here are a couple of their words. The first one, for me, goes a lot with this. The openness that can happen when we're floating in so much protection that we don't think of protection. The word is, I don't know, of course, how to pronounce it, because I am not in Greenland with the Inuits, and neither is my friend, but Alianak, maybe? A-L-I-A-N-A-A-K. Alianak. The wide horizon, this word means, this one word means, the wide horizon makes me feel at peace. To have a word for that. And you can imagine in the ice, the land of winter called Greenland, that you do know the horizon better than some of us. But we could just feel how in some cultures that the real culture of the humans living in the place, with the place, as the place, stayed in the language and didn't get wiped away. So there's horizon, and we know what that means, but we don't live it much. It's not part of didn't survive in our culture, that kind of relationship with where we are much. And I like to bring the contrast of the womb and the wide horizon makes me feel at peace. Because I think that inside the womb, without a question of how and why and who, it is like a wide horizon being at peace. It's so much not separation that it's not like being enclosed. But as a practice, we could enclose and give the wide horizon to the places of shock. Are there any questions so far about what I'm saying or something you'd like to add? My pronunciation of these letters on the page feels a little shameful, but Alianak is how I interpret those letters. It could be Alianak. The wide horizon makes me feel at peace. I also like about this translation of the word, the wide horizon acts on me. It makes me feel at peace. That kind of surrender to what makes us feel at peace. And again, I think that comes when there's this knowing of the not two, not one. There is a horizon that makes me feel at peace. Okay? According to what one friend was talking to me about transpersonal psychology, they see the second stage of coming into a breakthrough. As when the child's head, if the head happens to be down, kind of sets down. It's not actually going through the bones yet, but it's set in there. So there's a feeling of, we haven't actually started the exciting, dramatic part of things yet, but there's no way back. And I think that this might be the hardest part for us in our culture. Even if we're not taught, we don't have much training in how to be good at the other parts, I think this might be the really hard one. And it's partly because there are those two unsexy qualities of patience and equanimity that are basically all we have to go with. I want to give an example of another, a close friend of mine, whom I think she's fine with me saying this, especially since you don't know who I'm talking about. She had a pretty horrendous experience of sexual abuse as an adolescent girl. Not that any experience of sexual abuse is not horrendous, but she had one of those, as many of us have. And that keeps coming in as part of her deepening and evolving in her meditation. And she's one of the people that I know who has one a very sensitive, meditative process, state, life. She's one of the people I know who has some of the deeper experiences and can talk about that as well in a really sensitive way. And even so, one time I was giving a talk, and there was actually this one part that had come that I recognized was for her, not in a personal kind, it just came, and I, in that kind of synchronicity way, ah, she's here, and this came, and that fits. And just when I was getting to that part about the sexuality, and about especially things I see possibly helpful for women to hear about sexuality, and taking responsibility for ways we might be unconscious, like kind of conveniently unconscious of our own sexual power. She left just before that, like just before she could have possibly heard as she was leaving the word sexuality, and then maybe turned around and come back. So if the baby has no way to go back, we do. We have a choice. It seems that we have a choice to kind of leave when we need to stay. And I'm just using that example not to sound, it could sound kind of arrogant that I knew something that I had, and she just, it's just kind of to give a clear example of what might have been useful for her. And then to see how we do that. So even in just in a meditation, I remember one teacher saying this, I'd never heard it before. An Indian man who likes like half, at least 50% of his vegetable needs to be chili, and he likes to drink coffee all night working on the computer, and he looks like Mick Jagger with dark skin. He's really another great character on this planet. And he's the guru of several of my friends. And he finally said it. So many times when we've kind of gotten through the static and we're about to drop in is when we kind of stop, we give up, and we stop the meditation. And I just remember I didn't quite have that really serious connection with him, like this is my guru. And so it just made me laugh so loud, and everyone was, you know, it was a serious 3 a.m. secret teaching, and I was laughing because it felt so true about us. And so to learn how to be skillful when this is what's happening, when this is the face of revolution that's going on, or the face of aliveness, revolutionary aliveness that's going on, I think it can really help to start to feel the difference between the extreme discomfort that can come and does come when we are already starting to get our feet wet in something, in that new perspective that we need. And that some people in the group today were talking about that page on the five hindrances, which I like to call the five signs of breakthrough. Extreme discomfort, where it's so much easier to go to the addiction or I've got to get out of here, which is the same thing. Or the spacing out, the incredible restlessness, or doubting everyone and everything. To get to know those moments when they're happening, and you can tell that it's just like the child is getting set to be born. And to feel the difference between a discomfort that we need to say, this is a discomfort that communicates, get out of here, don't repeat this. And we can learn to feel the difference. Even if every time we think we're not sure, we can start to tap into something that has a best guess. This is where we need the freedom to stay. And this is where we need the freedom to go. And especially in this kind of context where we're really encouraging you to do what really feels to you like the most deepening thing, or the most deepening nothing to do. It's a great chance to play with feeling the difference between freedom to go and freedom to stay. And what that freedom means is that sometimes we'll go and we'll realize we wish we had stayed. We so wish we had stayed. And sometimes we'll stay and we'll so wish that we had gone. So if we can expect that even before, like, that's part of freedom, that it's, there's messiness. And that is what helps us learn. Sometimes if we put it too simplistically like that, am I going to stay or go? Is it a time to stay or go? It might be that we're kind of trying to force the child's head too far. And we need to be open to maybe some other third option that ends up being a way of staying or a way of going. So sometimes if we just think of a relationship, that's an easy one where often the subject comes up of should I stay or should I go? For some people anyway. Sometimes it's important to have the freedom to go and then stay. If we could really know that what's important is not maintaining that outer form. And when we have the freedom to risk losing the relationship to a person or to anything, then sometimes that's when we finally meet again. And so we have that phenomenon of people like separating in order to be able to be together again, and getting divorced so they can get married again. And then how we do that every day with other kinds of relationships. Is there any questions? Can you feel the feeling of like that pressure on the head of the baby that we all once were? And then bring that into like those moments where you want to run away, but something deeper doesn't even want to stay, but just manages, just does stay because we didn't freak out. So the third face is where it can get complicated. As it can get complicated in the literal birth. And if you know, if you have heard anything about astrology, this is about Pluto, who is the god of the underworld. And it's like psychosexual complication, life and death issues. And I think that this part we're more comfortable with in a strange way, maybe even addicted to, like culturally, I mean, we. But not really very good at. Like, think of all of those movies. I come back from not seeing movies from Hollywood, and I see another one, and just now in my father's house in Atlanta, there was a preview of a movie, I don't remember the name, but it was a sequel to something. And I said, are they still making those movies? And my brother said, yeah, the first one was, I don't know, let's say if it was Defender was the first one, and then this one is Defenders. And I was like, no, I don't mean like just that this is a sequel. I mean, this is like Jurassic Park. This is just, it's the same movie and they're still making it. It's amazing. And I think that what's beautifully maybe starting to be we're learning how to be complex rather than complicated. I think that that's something that we're learning now. I feel like this feels, I feel well with how we're learning in this area that we haven't had good training in. Feels like what we're learning how to do is a yes that looks like a no. Outwardly, it is a no, so the baby is pushing out as if saying no to the mother, but it's a yes to life. And it's a yes to diversity, it's a yes to being different without actually saying no to life or even saying no to the mother, which still is absolutely needed. And sometimes we could even physically try to feel that feeling of pushing on the ground to reach something where our yes is taking us without pretending that that there needs to be a no involved. Just feeling how it's all yes. How it's all like, it's one that looks like two. And in many ways acts like two, and then two squared and so on. But if we think, if we pretend, if we believe that there's actually a no and actually a two, then things do get complicated instead of complex, beautifully complex. Joanna Macy, have you heard of her? She's one of our elders here in this room, whether you know her or not, I think. She helped create the field of deep ecology, starting with her studies in biology and Buddhism. One thing that she's noticed about systems like us and us, and us, is that all the different parts of the system can continue to have their full independence and freedom as long as, and that complexity can keep growing, as long as there is an increase in communication. And when I think about that, I think, oh God, more meetings, like, oh, that's not gonna work, that's too heavy, like more talking, you know, like. And so obviously not, because we wouldn't have time to be different and do that fully if we have to keep kind of going back home to mother and explaining what we're doing, and is that okay, and all of that, internally or externally. And so it seems clear that there must be, there, like in the sense of there can be, there is another kind of communication that we need in order to really be myself, yourself, and 2, 4, 6, not separate, but not quite just one. And this feels where I keep hearing of really interesting experiments going on just now. And I hope you've had the chance. It was great that in the beginning of the retreat we had a little bit more depth of communication about silence and how much communication still goes on even if I'm not speaking or listening much. To even experience ourselves as communication, as that's what we are. We are communication. Not only in the human way, like being that part of creation, of the created world that can speak, and hopefully can learn to listen. We're still waiting to learn to listen. It strikes me that learning to listen probably comes when we agree that there's no way back, and yet we haven't gotten into the exciting, juicy, dramatic part. So not just that very important. What to call it? It's much more than a gift. But let's say the power of the voice. But all that we are as as communication, mutual, reciprocal, multidimensional. And maybe if we, if that pressure on the head reminds us that now is the time that it's time to stay, and we tune in and we listen, that might help us find that yes that looks like a no. And then as we're kind of reaching through the passageway to when we'll recognize where we've come. I think that it's really helpful to give attention exclusively to what is fresh, to the creativity. And I know that the word creativity is, we usually just immediately refer to an image of someone painting or writing or something like that. And so here also we've had the chance to feel our way into what is rest and what is activity. And then what is some kind of underlying buzz of creativity that often has a chance to come through us much more when we seem to be at rest. That underlying hum of aliveness that is always coming up with freshness and fresh ideas and fresh communication and fresh ways of communication. So really redefining rest and activity and creativity from a completely different level of us, from at least from that hum of aliveness, if not what brings forth the hum of aliveness. And then with our individual kind of apparatus to be able to keep shining that on only what is creative, no matter what else is happening. One small example, and then maybe one big example first, and then one small example. This teaching was given about no matter what, focus on the creative. Not even on what it's creating, but on the creative. It was given during World War II to people who are about to be killed within a few years, and then within a few moments. So when they were saying, only give attention to the creative, only give attention to what's alive, the teachings were, let's say, in a way, requiring that of the people receiving the teachings in the face of what would very much grab our attention, very easily grab our attention, like concentration camps. To be in a concentration camp and only, like this was something that happened with our sister and brother humans in the last 100 years. It's not a dream, it's not impossible. To be in the concentration camp, to be hit, and to focus only on the creative, to say, that's not for us. To say out loud to the other people with you, that blow is not for us. It's not about us. Not taking it in as another shock. So that's the kind of skillfulness that's kind of already available in the human species. And even from there, we could let creativity keep taking us to more and more intimate communication with aliveness. So I want to apply that to a small, a boring and ordinary example. Often, in a relationship, there are dynamics. And there's a person that I sometimes work with who has a sharp, quick tongue. Not that I don't. This person certainly does. And I noticed that it would be so easy to curtail what freedom is asking of me to kind of ask internally, will I get in trouble for that? And instead of just staying with the, what the creative is asking of me. And to keep having that small conversation of, am I going to have that blow of, that's wrong, that's not okay, for blah, 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 all these reasons. And then to just stay with the creative here and here in the other person. So that's a small example, but probably much more widespread. Yes?
I know you don't mean this, so perhaps you can expand on it further. The line between what you're describing and the form of martyrdom is so fine.
Yeah.
So close. I'm just wondering if you can say it
more. Yeah.
Yeah.
The martyrdom as a sickness would be catering to the dynamic rather than to the creative. Does that make sense? No? Okay. Dynamic would be, if there's a person who has a tendency to act out, then they would match in a dynamic, they would ask of someone to play the victim. And so I could play victim if I don't listen to what the creative is trying to push forth.
And what is the creative trying to push forth?
That is different in every instant. The example could be that it's not even a matter of standing up to someone to do something that they say no to, but doing it anyway, but just doing it anyway. And the kind of verbal blow that might come, which I'm not talking about even abuse, but someone just might frown and we could cringe and say, oh no, I bet it's not safe to say that or do that or sing that, or it's not safe to actually go against the schedule on the retreat and go running, even though the teachers told me to. This happens to, I'm not saying there's two people or so who, that was a question. And that is a question for us. Can I really go and run when everyone's talking about deep breaths? And even if the teachers are also saying, we want you to do your inner instructions more than anything else in the world. So it could be that it would look like a no to that person. It looks like I'm standing up to them to say what I need to say or to do what I need to do or to go away from them or whatever the response is. But the response would not be dancing around that polarity of aggressor victim, for example. It could be talking to the person about how they feel when they act aggressively. Or it could be saying, I never want to see you again. Or it could be that it has not much to do with that person, but how they trigger the internal father or whatever, the internal critic. But the skillfulness is that it's not in any way a reaction to a polarized, a duality, a dynamic. So that's what nonviolent action is hoping to be. That the creativity is acting not because I'm bothered that you're repressing me, but because creativity wants to do this, and this is what's true, no matter what. And that freedom is more important than even what happens to me. So the kind of people that we know of, we can remember them, that even in the most extreme situations, found that freedom was alive in them and was creative in within what was possible in their surroundings. But then that could make it feel like those were the heroes and I'm not a hero. So it's all of it, no matter concentration camp or Dharma hall or forest or home or work, street, bus, whatever. It's all everyday circumstance. And we're not to be a hero would be to say, really say, like, no and separation and me doing this. And that's not actually what's asked of, but it looks sometimes heroic. And that's something that for some of us is hard to accept, that we're doing something that people are going to see as heroic. And we know that it's not me doing it, and that I'm not against, and I'm not for, I'm just being true in an ordinary circumstance. So there's, do you have something to say?
No.
Okay. There's an image that I love to encourage us with how little attention is needed to go to what is already dead. So the image is a nest with eggs in it. So here we are sitting in our nests, and we're sitting on some eggs. And we don't know which eggs are alive and which eggs are dead. Or you could say sterile or whatever. We just warm the eggs. We just keep the nest warm. We give warmth. And so this is even a refinement of, like, it's not even that I have to figure out what is the creativity and keep my eyes on it and hold on to it, but actually just keep giving warmth, because what is alive will grow and what is dead will rot from the heat. It is dead. We can then start to feel what's dead and what's alive, and celebrate how it works. Just giving the warmth, staying with the love. So, the kind of two examples that we have are to show that it's not like it's something so easy. And it's not something that we have very many examples of in our own lives or in other people's lives. So that could be a good reason to bring this up more. Try it, to do it, to talk about it. Really staying, maintaining that connection with what is important. And we have that inner capacity to do that. That's what we love. And all of our practices are just to open up space for that love to act. Love of what is important. That we wouldn't like to be anywhere else, no matter what seems to be happening outside. No matter what praise, no matter what blame, no matter what loss, no matter what gain, no matter what success, no matter what failure, no matter what loss, no, what's the fourth one? Any Buddhists? Here. Praise, blame, loss, gain, success, failure. There's another pair.
Fame.
Yes. Fame and? Oh, that's success and failure. Anyway, you get the idea. No matter what seems to be happening. So sometimes that feels too hard, but we could then tune into first of all, how we actually love. This is why we love those dramatic stories. We actually love a challenge. And we love to be kind of, it's agreed, life agrees, we're up to the challenge. And here's the challenge. And it is the hardest challenge. And you might get praise, you might get blame. Doesn't tell you how you're doing. There's just the warmth, and there's something alive hatching that's bringing out more another kind of dynamism, complexity, grace. Does that make sense? This is another, where the second word I wanted to share with you, Inuit word. Again, I really, I will try to remember to ask my friend to tell me how to pronounce, get her friend to tell us how to pronounce these words. Nuanarpok, Nuanarpok. N-U-A, Nua, N-N-A-A, N-A-R-P-O-Q. A delirious pleasure in being alive. So that's the feeling of staying with what's important. And that's why it doesn't actually matter what someone says or doesn't say or whatever. It's really great to practice this on a retreat because you're not likely to have someone say something to you. Please, let's not say anything to each other, good or bad, until we end the silence, just to be able to have this experiment. If you see how it would be so tempting to think, oh, I'm just going to say, give the compliment, I'm going to say how much I appreciated that person's presence or whatever. But if you see how it could disturb that experiment, that important experiment. To really play with staying with what's important and noticing when you go to what's not important and start to be judged by yourself or someone else and be moved by that and then coming back and seeing how it feels. Okay, is that clear enough to go on? Yeah.
And your experiences with that word, is it always delirious? Can it just be like, oh, good?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I think why I like to apply this word to this stage is that there's so much energy in this stage that it could be more likely to be deliriously than when we're staying with what's most important in those other, in the womb, or in the don't know where to go, or in the next. So I'm just saying maybe this word has something to do with this stage. It's not like they said that or anyone else said that. So yeah, you can say it's not always delirious. But there is so much energy in this pushing through break, like pushing through towards breakthrough.
We're still on the third stage.
Sorry?
We're still on the third stage.
Yes, okay. That's all third stage. That's because it could be so complicated or it could be so much simplicity giving birth to complexity that we don't have to bother with the complexity. And that simplicity, I think, is the direct communication happens. So what that might look like is you seem to be resting, but actually you're humming with life, and something pops into your mind, and it's a fresh idea, and it helps. That might be one version of the kind of communication that's needed for that diversity that we are to be a beautiful life. We go to the fourth? Okay. The fourth one is where we really need to care about ourselves. So there's a lot of energy too here, but it's easy that we get carried out of ourselves in release. If we can keep the sensitivity and the caring when there is the release, when there actually is, we actually are in a new element, we're in the air instead of in the fluid. And this actually does describe really well the spiritual path. We start off in a place where everything's heavier, and we move towards what's hard to feel the weight of. We come into the air, and it feels like it's weightless. And so we have less to, we have not less, we have nothing to step, to stand on, to step on. And this is where we could really care for ourselves. So often there, when there's a release, it feels good. It feels like what we think freedom is in that emotional, psychological state. It feels like what we think of as freedom. And it's easy to get kind of carried out with an outflow of the energy instead of letting it be an outflow of energy that's taking with it the old. And we stay with the fresh, with the sensitive fresh. And we, care enough not to build a new identity around that new state of consciousness, or that new way of moving, or that new insight. So even if it happens, often it can happen, we're in maybe in meditation or walking or swimming or sleeping, we wake up and there's an insight. It's not just regular thinking, it's another kind of, maybe not even thought, but understanding, perspective, communication. It's a spark of communication, actually. It's not only for us. If we take that personally as if it's only a communication to me, whether from my higher self or from anywhere, as if it's like a two-way street, or sorry, a one-way street from the insight-giving place to me, instead of a spark of insight that informs me as, let's say, it radiates out as light to whoever's available. So if we accept those moments of synchronicity, synchronicitous sparks of insight, of fruit, and even if the mind does make some story about it and how I'm going to live this way and how now I'm in that stage of meditation or whatever, the typical one that we fall into is, now I've released that story. Now I've gotten over that habit pattern. Now I've gotten through my anger or whatever. And in that is an actual, we would like to say, no, I hate that about myself. And I'm so glad that I can believe it's gone for a few seconds. But what we're happy to have the relief from is the hatred. And if we could just stay, it's again staying, as the spark, so it's a different kind of staying. And even if the mind builds a shell, we don't go and move into it. That's not our new home. We start to learn how to walk on air. That's another one of my favorite lines from an Indian text that talks about now comes the walking on air part of our practice. Which, of course, doesn't happen only once. Then we're born again, so to say. And when we thought air was light, when we're born into the next most subtle thing, we could feel the heaviness of air. I mean, it's easy to walk on air. Try walking on space, on ether, and so on. But if we could be aware when there's a release, I think the more important part of what we could actually do there is to notice that we don't need to shut any doors on the past or to the past. Like, that is an event that acted on life. We had a part in letting that birth happen, but not believing that it means that now we can close the cupboard. Because maybe there's still some energy left in that anger that we still believe we should hate. It has a lot to teach us And luckily, it will come back. Yeah. If it's still stuck or paralyzed, it will come back to inform us. A friend of mine just was talking recently about something one of her teachers said. It was talking about actual healing for a person, for my friend's father. And the way to help, the way of performing a healing, was do your practice. Like, don't worry, don't freak out. Stay, and then do your practice and dedicate the merit. Give away the benefit. So that's that spark. It doesn't mean that there wasn't an effect on us, but we don't need to keep the benefit, like the fruit from the tree. And I just love that, the simple, as if we're moving some wooden blocks around. Well, you just practice and dedicate the merit. And that helps. So something that sounds so subtle and hard to move around starts to become as easy to move as a child's block of wood. But even more, let's say, fun. Yeah, exactly. Good question. The merit is that that gets freed, that's not mine or yours, and that I allow it to be experienced as not mine or yours. I allow that spark to that spark of insight or breakthrough to happen. It'd be like the child is born, and even if care is taken of the child in a personal way, it's not known as if it's mine. But it has aliveness, it has potential. It has, the way I usually think of merit is momentum. So it's momentum towards staying connected with what's most important. And because of what the most important is, because of the nature of that, staying connected to it, having momentum of connection to that, is like it automatically is benefit. And because the arrival of the spark has already done what it needed to do here, it's kind of like safe to let it go out and do what it can, so to speak. Is there any other thing to say? Yes.
So teaching, literal dedication through prayer or intention.
Yes. Yes. And I love to feel how, right, like not just, I think it's beautiful, like, let's, in that really clean way, like, let's practice and let's dedicate that traditional, I'll practice and then I offer it. But I also love to, like, what if the whole thing is infected with that spirit from the beginning? The way I remember to practice, the way I go to my practice, the way I start, the way I'm there. Which is not, again, that could be so easily done as a martyr, a sick martyrship, martyrdom. If I think I'm being a hero by doing it. But if it's just like that, it's just ordinary that we are communication, and so what I am doing is communicating, and it's not mine. And I love nothing more than this, so here, I'm just doing it. This is why they talk about generosity as the beginning, middle, end, the seed, sprout, fruit. fruit, flower fruit of spiritual path. It's not like me giving you something. That helps us. It's just like practicing loving kindness. It helps us come to where that's the only thing we could see. That's what aliveness is. So may the wide horizon make us feel at peace, and may we allow a delirious pleasure in being alive to guide us through the dark tunnel to the spark that's for all. The spark that nourishes all of us.
Can you write that down?
Maybe I could ask someone else to write that down. Anyone want to try?